Good morning again, everybody. Last week, we started a new sermon series on the book of Genesis, and last week was fun. If you were here, we were like, we left off where God was spinning galaxies in his fingertips, and the earth was like beginning to teem with all the diversity of life, and all of it was like declaring God's glory and wonders just by its existence. And we paused the sermon to get a lesson on cuttlefish, and there was just like, we were celebrating the wonders of God's creation. And man, it was awesome. Last week was fun. This week, not so much, just so you know. It's a bit of a downer today, just so you know. Advance warning. We take a pretty hard turn in Genesis and in this study. And so, I took like a little bit of a hard turn this week. You know, last week, again, last Sunday was just so vibrant and so fun. And then Tuesday morning, I got a Facebook message from a lady from my past that who had a daughter that I knew all throughout her childhood. And the lady was letting me know that her 24-year-old daughter had lost her battle with drug addiction. And this is so I'm doing a funeral for a girl on this coming Friday. It'll be the third funeral that I've done for someone in their 20s, you know? The tragic, I mean, it's unspeakable, you know, that this girl was so tormented that her own life, like, slipped through her fingertips. And I know you all have, like, similarly tragic things that are some degree of closeness to your own life, you know? And it's in those moments that when I get that, like, Facebook message or when we hear, like, very horrible news, that we realize that the theology of creation and the wonders of God's creation is just, it's incomplete, you know? It's not enough for us. There has to be more because the theology of God's, the wonders of God's creation just does not explain the great suffering and pain that exists in our world. There is a gap between where God created the world to be and the world in which we live. There is a big gap between those two things. A world that, God created it one way, but we experience it with pain and suffering and death. And the theological term to describe the difference or the distance between where God created us and where we now live is referred to as the fall, you know, the fall from where we were to where we are now. And that gap or the fall is explained to us theologically in Genesis chapters 2 and 3, and so that's where we're going to be today. I'm trying to, like, just for this series at least, find a piece of art that we can put up during that kind of just helps tell the story of the Genesis story. And so last week, you remember I had this like kind of Renaissance-y painting, and it was like the diversity of life and creation and trees and all this stuff, and it was very beautiful. And when I went to look for a piece of art that told the story of the fall, I was finding paintings of a similar ilk, you know, just like very beautiful, like too beautiful. And like oddly sexual, and just like, there was just, it's just weird, like Adam and Eve like draped over each other and like the temptation, you know, and I just felt like it all felt too beautiful to describe the tragedy that is the fall of mankind. And so I chose this painting instead. So yeah, this is a piece of street art. It's on a garage in London by a famous street artist in London called Stick. And actually, originally, you see the little garage handle there? Originally, he had taken one of those old red, like, plungers from inside the tank of the toilet, you know, those plunger balls, and hung it on that, like, garage door handle to symbolize, like, the fruit or the apple or whatever. And, like, look, guys, I know maybe this is not, like, your artistic style or whatever, but to me, this better communicated the starkness and the hiddenness and the kind of the ugliness that is the fall. And so I'm going to leave this up throughout the sermon. Hopefully it's not too off-putting for you guys, but this is It is. The fall is sad and stark and hidden. And so much like that crummy painting on a garage door. Okay, I want to make one disclaimer before we jump in. I think that this passage, the passage about Adam and Eve and the fall, raises at least as many difficult questions as last week's passage about creation did. There are some really hard questions that are raised. Questions like this. How did the seemingly evil serpent end up in God's perfect, beautiful creation? That is a very good question. Questions about the tree. You know, what is with this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and why did God put it there, you know? And what even of Adam and Eve? Like, are those, like, actual historic people? Like, maybe some of you are having a hard time, like, really grasping the most literal interpretation of this passage. And to all of you, I want to say, like, those are awesome questions. And I am not afraid of those questions. I truly am not. And neither should you be, you know? You should chase those rabbit trails when you come to passages like this. And if you need help chasing them, I will help you. Like, I will help resource you so that you can ask and try to find, helpful questions or helpful answers to your questions. I'm not going to get into those questions today, obviously, because I only have, like, a few minutes, and those are very deep, hard questions. And furthermore, I think that the truth and the main point of this passage transcends lots of those questions, meaning, like, it's true no matter how you kind of, where you land on some of those questions. Okay, so I'm going to focus there. Okay, we're going to talk about the curse today. The curse that was read for us, the curse of this world, and we're going to talk about how it is self-evident, how it is self-imposed, and how it is not self-solving, okay? Self-evident, self-imposed, but not self-solving. Let's talk about how it's self-evident. So here in Genesis 3, there's the business about the snake and the temptation and the fruit, and then God discovers their sin, and then he pronounces this curse on them that Janine read for us. And God outlines for us in this passage some of the consequences of the fall. What is for us the evidence of that gap between where God created the world to be and the world in which we now live. I don't think the curse here, that God's list, is comprehensive, but it is. He gives us some helpful categories to understand how the world has fallen. Okay, so I'm going to highlight some of those categories and just really try to press home like how self-evident the curse of the fall is all around us, okay? So let's start with what God tells the woman. First, he says, I will make pains in childbearing very severe. This is like an indictment against our own biology and on the direct blessing that God had given humanity before that, to be fruitful and multiply. So now even that basic human function that God had like instilled from creation would be marked by this real pain and difficulty. But beyond that, our bodies, even more generally, we know are like subject to decay and pain, right? So this week, you know, I know some of, maybe there's some like younger folks, especially teenagers, you know, that are like, you know, oh, okay, yeah, someday I guess my body will hurt. Like, you know, but it's like, look, I'm in my 30s. The time is now, okay? Like, don't think it's going to be like when you're elderly, okay? Like, I woke up on one night this week and my knees were hurting so bad that I had to sleep on the couch and ice. It was terrible. That's the fall, okay? You know, I can get by with it. I bounce back the next day or whatever. But some of you, like, I know you guys' stories. Like, some of you, your life really is marked by, like, actual physical pain. You know, some of you really do carry around, like, the fallenness of our bodies in your body. And you experience a kind of pain that is, like, it decreases your quality of life. And it's truly hard. And so, man, it's not a joke, you know. My nephew has lived in a wheelchair for 18 years of his life. There's evidence all around us that our bodies bear in them the results of the fall. Our bodies are broken. So God goes on. He continues with the woman. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So here God moves from like the physical realm to the relational realm. He shows us that there won't just be enmity within us. There will now be enmity between us. There won't just be physical pain that we experience. There will be real relational pain that we experience in this life. The particular problem that God highlights here is in the marital relationship. He illustrates here that it won't really be to love and to cherish anymore. It will be to desire and to dominate. You know, that's going to kind of plague our most important relationships. I read this same, like the curse, I read in a different translation, the ESV. I love this translation, the way that they say this verse. In the ESV, God says to the woman, "Your desire shall be contrary to your husband." Have truer words ever been spoken? I mean, that just like perfectly characterizes like even our most intimate relationship is like our desires just run not together. You know, it's just so hard. Our relationships are marked by striving and difficulty. Okay, let's switch over to the curse that God outlines to the man. Cursed is the ground, he says. When you work the ground, there will be thorns and thistles. You'll have to sweat. You'll have to work the ground. It won't be easy. Now, I want to say, work itself is not the curse of the fall. Okay? It's important to note that. Adam and Eve were working before the fall happened. And God, the Bible shows us that in eternity, there will be like meaningful, fulfilling work that we all do. So it's not work itself, as if to say God's ideal creation isn't just us kind of lazily loafing around, okay? There's like real work. Work is okay. It's the striving and the difficulty and the pain that surrounds our work that is, I think, a result of the fall. I remember the first time this landed home for me, I was probably like 15 or 16 years old, and I'd been recruited by my grandma to paint her deck. And it was probably like, it was like a July day, like one of these days where even if you get like a good start on the day, you're still just like cooked by 10 a.m. or whatever. And so I remember just like painting my grandma's deck, and this passage like came to my mind, and I was just like, I was dying. I was dripping sweat and I was hunched over, and I was just like, cursed, you know, like this is the curse, man. Like, I hate this work. This is so hard. And I guess I want to say that like in our country, or I don't know, not in our country, but just like in modern times, like there's a lot of ink spilt on telling people that you should have a job that like fulfills every personal desire and longing that you have. You know, like if your job doesn't like scratch every itch of your heart and soul, then you should cast that off and go find a job that speaks to like, and that's fine. If some of you have those jobs, that is awesome. I'm excited for you. But that is privilege, like talking. You know, like there are just so many people in our country and around the world who don't have that luxury, who don't get to find jobs that like satisfies every desire of their heart. But they just have to work. They just have to work. And some of their jobs are really hard and marked by real suffering and difficulty. You know, and I'm sure they're very grateful for those jobs. That's good. But like, I'm just saying they're more acquainted with the curse of work than probably some of us are. Furthermore, about this curse that God has given Adam about the thorns and the thistles and such, you know, like it demonstrates to us that even our physical world has fallen to some extent, you know, and that helps us because you know, it demonstrates to us that the ground isn't just going to like bear bountiful fruit for us readily and all the time. Like it produces thorns and thistles, you know? And so that helps explain like hurricanes and natural disasters and COVID and just like the very tragic things that happen in our even physical world. The physical world itself that God created initially has now like, there's a gap. Okay, then lastly, in this self-evident piece, in this curse, God hits Adam and Eve with a feature of the curse that I am sure landed like a ton of bricks If they hadn't understood the gravity of the curse yet, I think they did when God got to the end. If we want to talk about the fall or the gap between what was designed and where we are, then here it is. God says, "You will return to the ground from which you came. You are dust, and to dust you will return." There is this ultimate and final aspect of the curse that is devastating, which is that you will die. The joy of this life and of creation and of knowing and being in relationship with one another, all of that is going to come to an end. That is probably the most self-evident of all the aspects of the curse. And look, we're pretty good at distracting ourselves from that aspect of the curse a lot. You know, most of us don't have to think about that all that much, but look, I went to a funeral last week, and I'm doing this funeral this next week, and it's like a funeral that you cannot distract yourself from the truth that we are all going to our death. And that is a feature of the curse. Okay, the fall is self-evident. It's all around us, and it's obvious to us all the time. Let's talk about how it is self-imposed. Self-imposed. It's pretty easy to look around the world, I think, and see all the junk, you know, just like see how really messed up it is. And kind of almost, I think, like all people can agree on that. You know, like Christians, atheists, like everybody knows, like this world is marked by pain and suffering and difficulty. Here's the Christian view of the fall, though, is that it is self-imposed, that we have something to do with the way that the world is now. We didn't read it all, obviously, but the Genesis 3 story is about the serpent and the tree and the fruit that we're familiar with. God had outlined the plan of creation to humanity, and then they rebelled against his loving rule. They rebelled against God, and the key here is that we are responsible for the pain and suffering in this world. I used to like really puzzle about the connection between those two things, you know, like it seems a little bit arbitrary and random, like, okay, so they ate a piece of fruit and then God said, you know, birth pains and thorns, you know, like what's the connection between the two? But I think the connection, the key that connects the crime to the punishment is rebellion. That's the word that I would use. The key that connects the crime to the punishment is rebellion. You know, God created the world with this hierarchy, okay? And in the hierarchy, God is on top, and he is ruling over us, humanity, and then we are ruling over creation. And so the design is for us to lovingly serve our God who's ruling over us, and for creation to lovingly serve us, really, as we rule over it. But we rebelled against God's loving care. And when we did that, it kind of injected the whole system with rebellion. It turned the whole hierarchy askew. And so now, just like we rebelled against God, it's all of creation that is now rebelling against us. And so that's why, like, when our bodies are supposed to serve us, you know? Ideally, our bodies are like, you know, can do what we tell them to do, but they don't. They rebel against us. And when we go to work the ground, it rebels against us. And even in our relationships, we're designed to lovingly serve one another, but now we like rebel against one another. And that helps me with the theology of the fall. It helps me. Because it helps me to understand that the theology of the fall isn't about two people a long time ago that did something wrong and that now like I just live under their curse. The theology of the fall really teaches us that it's the rebellion in my own heart that is like the source of so much of the pain and suffering in this world. And so that even if I like hypothetically were able to like, you know, start fresh, clean slate, I would earn the curse myself. because there's that rebellion that exists in my own heart, not just in my neighbor's heart, not just in the political party that I disagrees with heart. It's like in my heart, I am responsible. Okay, lastly, the curse is not self-solving. It's not self-solving. Where do we go from here? That's the question that I wonder if Adam and Eve were asking that day. Like, God, what do we do now? Like, is there any way to undo what we have done? This horrible mistake that we have made. Is there anything that we can do? I think God gives them a very subtle hint in this passage in Genesis chapter 3. He says that it will not be you, Adam and Eve, who undoes the curse that restores life and beauty and peace. He puts this very small hint in verse 15 of chapter 3. And verse 15 has a name in Christian theology. It's called the Proto-Evangelium. Pretty like medieval sounding word, right? Proto-Evangelium. So it's in the verse 15 is in like the curse that God gives the snake or evil, you know? And God says that someday, even though evil will be striking at the heel of humanity, that there will be one who is born of a woman who will crush evil's head. I remember seeing this, there's this like this very jarring scene in the movie The Passion of the Christ where Jesus like stomps the head of a snake with his foot, and it's like very hideous and terrible. But it's based on this verse, actually, Genesis 3:15. In this verse, God is foreshadowing that the curse will someday be reversed in Jesus Christ. It's the proto-evangelium, which is translated as the first good news. It's the first good news in Scripture. That Jesus is the one that in this life is the key to experiencing some real healing of our physical bodies, healing of our relational brokenness, healing in our marriages and in our work. And that in Jesus and his work on the cross, he defeated evil and the punishment of the curse forever. And that he makes a way for us, even though we are going to the dust, he makes a way for us to be born again, to be raised to new life in him. Amen.